This is episode 363, dated Friday, June 7th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco. This is episode 363, dated Friday, June 7th, 2024. Peter O'Toole, who's normally our co-host and does a great job for us, cannot be with us today. He has a prior commitment. So filling in for him graciously will be our good friend, Annie Chiappetta. Thank you very much, Annie, for taking the time to be our co-host for this episode. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Bob. Thanks for putting out the call and letting me guest today.
What's the weather like where you're at today, Annie?
We are just outside of Pittsburgh, and it's very, very windy, but clear and on the cool side.
Oh, yes. We're sunny and about 75 right now. We're going to be on a nice stretch of warm weather with a couple of showers here and there, but we'll take it.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available to the audience. We have Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. He also edits our shows. Also, Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline, thank you for hosting our programs on the chat service. We appreciate that. Okay, so our media outlets, thank you very, very much for airing us when you do. We appreciate it. And finally, to Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, thank you very much for posting our programs on my website. All you have to do is go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will hear all of our archives, or most of them anyway, if you choose one, from latest to earliest. And as Peter says all the time, merci, Jackie. I also want to thank Melissa for our help today, as she is our host for today's episode. Melissa, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate having you with us.
Thank you, sir.
And, of course, thank you to Brad for streaming us on ACB Media 5. And because he does that, let me give out my email address for those people who are listening. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Today, we're very pleased to have with us Paula Fleming. Paula is the marketing and sales chief officer, or I should say the chief marketing and sales officer with the Better Business Bureau out of Boston, Massachusetts. Paula, it's a pleasure having you with us.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Paula, first of all, what is your role with the Better Business Bureau so that we can better understand what's going on there?
Yes. Well, you mentioned my title and it actually encompasses a lot. Primarily, it is my job to educate the public in regards to who the Better Business Bureau is and what we do. And unlike many businesses where we have one specific audience, we are both a B2B, which is business focused, and B2C, which is consumer focused. And we've been around in this area. I'm in charge of Eastern Mass, Maine, Rhode Island, and Vermont. We've been around since 1920. So we've been around for over 100 years, and across the United States, Canada, we have over 400,000 members of the Better Business Bureau.
Not New Hampshire?
We are not New Hampshire. There is one, but it is run by a different CEO.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about some of the items that you address. How do you help business out?
Of course. Well, the BBB, a lot of people think we're a government agency. We're actually a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to build trust in the marketplace. So we do that because we're a consumer champion. Obviously, we want to empower consumers by providing free access to business reviews, ratings, and customer reviews and information to make an educated purchasing decision. And that could be if you're purchasing a car. It could be if you're looking for a lawyer going through a divorce. We really report on all businesses and not just our member companies, every industry. And then we have business accountability, where we set standards for ethical business behavior and encourage companies to become accredited, which demonstrates their commitment to transparency and fairness in the marketplace. And then we play a huge role within our communities. We provide valuable resources on everything from consumer rights to scams and tips for making informed purchasing decisions.
How does a business become accredited?
Great question. It's an application process. And in order to even be able to complete the application, you have to be in business for 6 months. Depending on which state, if your industry business deems necessary, you have to be properly licensed and insured. And what I mean by that is, for example, Massachusetts has very strict licensing, whereas in Vermont, they might not need a license to practice their business. So it is our job to gather information about businesses. And oftentimes we do that directly from the business owners who either get listed with us, which is not being accredited, but they could still have an A rating, or by applying and then joining our community that adheres to, you know, being responsive to all customer reviews, being responsive to complaints, maintaining that they're properly licensed and insured, acting in an ethical manner, making sure that they have no false advertising claims. And so there's different variables that go in. They have to have a B or higher rating with the Better Business Bureau. And there's different variables that go in. Our team reviews every application and either approves or denies the applications on a weekly basis.
From a personal observation, it must be complicated where you oversee several states and each state has their own separate rules. That might get a little complicated, though.
It does. I've been doing this for over 20 years now at the Better Business Bureau, and I can tell you I still get confused. Yeah, it is, because and it changes, right? So, you know, 5 years ago, they may not have needed to be licensed, but now they do in different industries. So yes, it's making sure the team is up to date with all the laws and all the intricacies of working with the government agencies to make sure that these businesses are adhering to their state policies and procedures.
I have one more question for now before I turn it over to Annie. I'm sure she wants to talk to you too.
Okay.
Now, are you involved with audits and making sure that businesses comply with the tax laws? Is that part of it?
No, we do not.
You don't do that?
No, we do not.
Okay.
But I would assume that if they aren't in compliance with the tax laws, they wouldn't be in business too long.
I wouldn't think so.
No, we do work with government agencies, everybody from the Attorney General's Office, Office of Consumer Affairs, the FTC, the FBI, depending on what's going on, the state police, the local police. We work with all of the different government agencies, but we are not one.
Annie, do you have any questions at this time?
I sure do. So I'm a big fan of reading all kinds of consumer type recommendations, you know, through the Times or consumer reports. Do those types of recommendations get in your way, or does it help you do your job?
Oh, they absolutely do not get in our way. No, I think, well, first of all, the ones you listed are reputable. Consumer reports, I actually use myself as well. They're great resources and we work together with them. One aspect of my job is public relations, in which I work with the media to make sure that we're feeding them factual information. So it could be anything from the top scams that go on to, you know, if there is a business that is acting unfortunately unscrupulously. So we do work with the different media agencies and different, like, Consumer Reports, AAA, Yelp. We work with all of them.
Oh, that's really good to hear. Has the internet and the World Wide Web helped you do your job better?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. But that being said, I will tell you that phishing scams, which, not like going to catch a bass, but like phishing, P-H-I-S-H, phishing scams and other scams, including online purchase scam, all revolve around this technology that makes life sometimes extremely convenient. And it also adds to the scams and the variations of scams that are transpiring. So fake websites or social media ads offering deals that are too good to be true, for example. In vacation scams are hot right now, people that are stealing pictures. So yeah, although I think technology, and now with the use of AI, that it is a great tool. Before, I used to have to do my TV interviews in person. And you can imagine driving 6 hours to Vermont for a 5-minute interview and 6 hours back.
No. Yeah.
Where now they are all very welcoming in regards to a quick jumping on and doing a quick Zoom interview. So it's made the convenience of my job and the ability to educate an even wider audience much easier.
I just want to make a comment at this time and relate a small story. I'm sure you're familiar with the term spoofing.
Yes.
And with that in mind, I have a little tale to tell you. One evening, and I'll make this as short as I possibly can, I received a phone call from somebody who claimed to be from a pizza place. I'll call them Pizza X, just for the sake of the discussion. Okay. And they were ready to send somebody over my house to collect money from me because supposedly I didn't pay for food, and they were so upset. And I said, that wasn't me. I never ordered anything and not paid for it. So, you know, I did the caller ID, and it was from that company. So I called the company, and I asked them if they were sending anybody out to collect money from customers. And they said, no, we're not doing that. So apparently this individual who assumed the role of bill collector was calling people on behalf of this pizza establishment, and he was not even affiliated with them, but the number showed up on caller ID. How does that work with spoofing?
Yeah, spoofing in a nutshell, it's a deceptive technique where someone disguises themselves as something or someone else to gain your trust or to trick you in some manner, which you're describing.
But they use a real phone number.
Yeah, they spoof. It's called spoofing. They spoof a phone number, sometimes an email address and even a website. And at times you might even receive a text message to make it seem like it's coming from a legitimate source.
Right.
It's really hard. I don't know exactly how it's done. But there are signs that you can look out for. So just, I encourage listeners to be cautious when they are receiving a suspicious call. You did exactly what I would tell people, which is contact the sender or the person directly, hang up the phone and call the actual business.
I do.
To confirm its legitimacy. And that's what I would encourage. And also, making sure these devices that we're all on are the security software, antivirus and anti-phishing software can help detect and block spoofing. So making sure everything is up to date as well is very important.
By the way, I have the same experiences with PayPal. I would get emails from PayPal or from people who claim to be from PayPal asking me for a money request of over $1,000.
Wow.
I reported one incident once and I did get an acknowledgement back. So that was a good thing.
Yes, well, most definitely.
This is Annie. My husband and I have had our identity stolen twice in the last 10 years, and it was pretty scary, but I don't want to digress from what we're talking about, but it's real. So all of the, you know, what you said, Paula, about all of this, you know, the internet and the electronic age is very convenient, but it also, you know, we have to be cautious, just like we've always been. We can't let our guard down, and we have to be knowledgeable. And that leads me to asking my next question for you. So if we are a consumer, let's say I'm a consumer and I got a bad deal. Let's say, I don't know, I bought a KitchenAid from Best Buy and, you know, or something like that. And I felt like I wasn't getting my refund, you know, or they weren't honoring my return in some way. What would be my first step?
Sure. Well, if a consumer is unhappy with a product or a service, then we encourage you to first, obviously, go to the business. But in this case, you said you already did. You're unhappy.
Right.
Then we would encourage you to file a complaint. So you can file a complaint online on our website at bbb.org, or you could call us at 508-652-4800. And then we forward the complaint to the business and ask them to respond within 14 days. We act as a third impartial party. And we try to have the consumer and the business come to a resolution. So whether it is they give you a full credit or they replace the item or they fix if they provided a service and you're unhappy with the quality, they fix it. Usually there's a financial or tangible result when you're filing a complaint, which is different than a customer review.
Okay. Are there any times where the customer loses or doesn't get yes. know what they feel.
Yeah.
And is there an appeal process with that?
There is. Yes, there is. You can go back and forth. However, if we say, okay, this is not going to be resolved, we can close a complaint. It doesn't happen often where, you know, the consumer ends unhappy. We try our best to navigate the situation with both the business and the consumer. But gone are the days are that the consumer is always right, because unfortunately, I've learned over my 20 plus years that people act on emotion and get very, they're quick to come to the Better Business Bureau to complain. And therefore, we have to take into consideration that they may not be correct or, right. you know, it might be a false complaint. So we verify complaints, which is very important. And yeah, so we try to work through it. Overall, I like to, I obviously like to think that we're a helpful resource for consumers who are unhappy with a product or service. And we provide the platform for them to voice their concerns and seek a resolution. And we try to get it when it is deemed necessary.
Great. And do you charge for these, any of these services? How does a Better Business Bureau, you know, support themselves? You said it was nonprofit.
Great question. So we actually, our members pay a dues based on their employee count and what membership level they choose. And so we have a variety of businesses. They run the gamut. They run the size of business. It could be anybody from the local native cleaner to the Wayfair, Liberty Mutual, John Hancock, the large businesses. And they join for different reasons. Sometimes they join because they want it just to use the accredited business seal on their website, which instills trust when people are making purchasing decisions. Sometimes they don't have the ability to create a website or even a logo, and we offer that as part of membership. And so we offer a lot of different benefits, and we are paid by our members. And that if that locally, as I mentioned, we have roughly 6,500 across the United States. There are over 400,000. And to that point, there are over 90 Better Business Bureaus across the United States.
So anyone who opens up a small business can apply.
Correct. Yes. As long as they're in business for 6 months or, you know, some actively working to achieve their business goals, yes, they can apply. BBB.org. Again, it's BBB.org, and they can apply top right. There's a link to apply for BBB accreditation. They choose the membership level that they're interested in, what needs they might have, and how we can help with our benefits that we offer. And, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, when I began 20 years ago, the majority of our members were the typical blue collar home improvement contractors. And I'm seeing a shift now where a lot of agencies and service based industries are coming to us for accreditation. Not sure what that means yet, but it is an interesting shift for the first time in my 20 year career here at Better Business Bureau.
Interesting stuff. So tell me a little about your history. How'd you get there?
Oh, wow. My history. Well, I am a girl with severe ADD, so I need to keep going and keep moving. And the Better Business Bureau being a nonprofit and having a very diverse membership base and being a wide area, geographically speaking, I am constantly moving and meeting new people and learning new things. And I really enjoy it. I graduated from college in New Hampshire, and then I worked at an agency for 5 years. And then I decided to go into the nonprofit life, and the Better Business Bureau has grown significantly since I joined. And I'm very passionate about what we do. I truly believe in it. And we have grown our team to 10 of us now on the communications marketing team. And I'm very proud of all of the hard work. We save consumers thousands of dollars just with our BBB scam tracker alone, which is a tool that it's an online prevention tool and reporting tool that it actually enables both consumers and businesses to report fraud and fraud attempts. And we use that platform to help educate them so they don't become a victim to scams that are transpiring.
How successful has it been?
Extremely. Yeah, the BBB scam tracker has helped thousands of people, and it has not been around for 100 years. I would say it's been around for about 8 to 10 years. And, you know, a lot of people used to say, well, we're going to complain to the Better Business Bureau. But again, I want to stress, not only do we offer information on scams, but we offer a wide range of tips to help people stay educated on various topics, including like tips on buying a home security system, contracting with confidence, phishing reports as scammers adopt new technology. AI is a hot topic. And then we also offer business tips as well. So I want people to, if they take away anything, is to start with Better Business Bureau. We don't want people to end with the complaint aspect of it, because if you arm yourself with knowledge and do the research, we're confident you will do business with an ethical business, member or non, and also be aware of scams that are happening.
You know, this is Annie again. It's what you just said really hit home with me about the prevention part of it.
Right.
Like if you're informed, you won't be as victimized. You know, you'll
right.
be able to, you know, go, oh wow, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. So,
exactly.
And it used to be a very reactive thing years and years ago. And now we've just had to, go with the changes and what it demands. Being a consumer is not what it used to be. You know, we have to build up our information in order to protect ourselves. So
absolutely. And I would say if there's one tip that I could give, if you're making purchases online or even large ticket items, that you use a credit card, because a lot of people don't realize that using a credit card is an extra layer of protection. If you are
right.
unhappy with the product or service, or you don't get the product or service that you thought, you can actually dispute the charge through the credit card company. So it's not that I'm encouraging people to build up that debt, but rather build up the ability to protect themselves.
Great point. Great point. Yeah, I agree with that. That's come to help us, especially when we had our identity. The credit card companies were the most helpful. They're the ones that filtered us into, getting somebody to help us and stay with us and make sure we were doing all right and reestablish ourselves. So yeah, I agree with that for sure. Have you ever been scammed?
My son was, and I was with him. It was ironic because I actually had done a news piece about this, and he thought he was smarter than the scammers, and he purchased something online. It was Apple AirPods, and we went to go pick them up, and they were counterfeit. They were fake, or some people say dupes, and we ended up at the police station, and the police got involved, and we actually got his money back. And the scammer said that he didn't realize they were fakes, which he obviously did. And the police handled it from there. But yeah, so that is a recent within the last 2 years that had happened. So I would say that was and then one time, actually, this is my son as well. He purchased something online and we received it, and there was no way to ship it back, and it wasn't what he had anticipated, and he used a debit card. So we were out of the luck.
Yeah. That happened to us once too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess no matter how careful you are, they can squeak by.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you just don't expect it. I mean, we come from a society where we trust people before we distrust them, you know, and it's kind of a mind shift to have that cautionary note there all the time. You know, is this legit? Is this not? And you know, your tips, I'm actually going to go on to your website and check out some of them, because, you know, I think I just need to refresh myself.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And also I'd like to say, you know, a lot of the negativity in the world that's already here, something positive is that it's free to write a customer review for a business, and especially these small businesses. When you write a customer review at BBB.org, it can take, you know, 10 minutes to write it, and it can really add to the bottom line of a small business and make a huge amount of difference, and they appreciate it. And it's a little positivity, so it doesn't cost a penny, and they really, like I said, appreciate it. It does matter.
It does matter. Like an Amazon review. I'm always asking for Amazon reviews for my books.
Yes.
And then as a consumer, I do my reviews on Amazon, because it makes a difference. Because when you're a consumer and you're looking to buy something, it doesn't matter whether you're going to spend $15 or $1,500 or $15,000, you read those reviews.
Absolutely.
It's part of and parcel of what we do now as buyers and consumers and spending our money. So, you know, I figure I'm doing a good one, you know, passing it up, passing my experiences on, even if they're not so good, you know, even if I have something negative to say, at least, it's a caution for the next person if they're looking for that answer. So now how do you feel about that? Like leaving your feedback and, you know, reading feedback from other people if you're buying things, is that something we should, you know, start putting in our, you know, being in our automatic behavior of being consumers online and stuff like that?
Yes. Well, there's two points I'd make to that though. Okay. You have to, so depending on where you're reading the customer reviews, mm-hmm. you need to make sure that it's a legitimate customer review and not all businesses verify that it is actually a consumer of the business. So what I mean by that is it could be a friend or family member that's trying to, you know, build up positive customer reviews and they're just writing things to write them. Or it could be a competitor trying to tear down a business, right?
Right.
So
right.
You always have to, you know, where are you reading those? And then also take everything with, you know, a grain of salt. If the business is there, responding in a polite and, you know, what seems like from a good place, trying to resolve a negative customer review, you want to take that into consideration. I think that's why I read. Typically, I'll read a customer review, then I'll look at the response if there was one from the business. And I always read more than just one customer review, which is why I really push customer reviews. I think they're extremely important, and especially the positive ones, because everyone is so quick to write negative and not the positive. And there's so much positivity that goes unnoticed, especially for small businesses.
Right. And so what do you think about like Facebook and Twitter, and how do they do the, is the consumer or the business ultimately benefited by social media, or is it a 50-50 kind of thing?
I think absolutely. I mean, this is a trick. My girlfriends laugh at me, but say we were in the North Shore on a girl's day just on Sunday, and I just typed in on Instagram for hashtags North Shore. And I got some great recommendations just simply by doing that, because businesses are on there and people are on there. So if I got a great Mexican restaurant because I just simply did that and I looked them up, and it was a great experience. So I think for consumers and for businesses being on social media, if you have the ability to dedicate some time to it, is important.
Paula, I have a related question.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the GoFundMe pages? I have mixed feelings about them.
Oh, good question, Bob.
Oh, I have mixed feelings. Yeah, I have mixed feelings as well. I feel like everybody has a GoFundMe. It's a powerful platform. It's revolutionized the way people raise money for various causes, obviously both personal and charitable. There's positive aspects, I would say, are accessibility, community building, transparency, success stories. Considerations and challenges are verifying that it's a legitimate story or campaign, that this funds are going to who you intend them to. Fees, GoFundMe charges a platform fee.
Yes, they do.
And payment, and also payment processors take a cut, which can reduce significantly the amount of money that goes directly to the beneficiary. Not all campaigns receive equal attention or support. And some critics have argued that GoFundMe can create a culture of reliance on crowdfunding for basic needs rather than addressing systematic issues that lead to financial hardship. So
could you explain what crowdfunding is?
Oh, wow. So yeah. So the first time I ever learned about crowdfunding was during the pandemic, because a business, and I was like, what is going on? A business locally, a restaurant, was raising money this way by asking a large number of people to contribute small amounts of money. And it's typically through an online platform, sometimes GoFundMe. And what happens is the campaign creator, so in this case, it was a local restaurant that's doing very well, very successful, sets a fundraising goal, tells their story, and explains how the funds are going to be used, and you all buy into it. It could be donation-based, reward-based, equity-based. So there's different ways. Some crowdfunding platforms are Kickstarter, you might have heard of, but also GoFundMe. is one as well.
Right. So let's say, for instance, the most notable one that I've read in the last couple of years was the science fiction and fantasy author Brandon Sanderson. He created a GoFundMe because he was unhappy with, this is my take on it, unhappy with the way the traditional publisher was holding back, you know, his advance money. And so he decided to see if he could, you know, do it on his own. And he raised $3 million.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, but I don't often hear that is that successful with, you know, a small business or even an agency, you know, or raising money for the homeless and things like that. So do you have any thoughts about how that equity can, you know, get back to where it used to be, you know, helping the small person, helping the, you know,
it's hard. You know, you mentioned the author, I believe you said it was.
Yeah,
there, when you mentioned a few million dollars, an example of one of the largest ones was the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. They raised over $24 million to help fight sexual harassment and assault in the workplace. And the second one that I know about was the George Floyd Memorial Fund.
Yes.
They raised over $14 million
using this
to support the family of George Floyd and advocate for racial justice. So there is a lot of money, especially when you put like a celebrity like Ashton and Mila.
Mm-hmm.
Kutcher and Kunis, they're a married couple. They raised over $37 million to support humanitarian efforts in the Ukraine, where she is from. So when then you're talking about the small businesses. Now, like I said, this small business didn't have enough money. It was farm to table. They had a great concept and
great idea. I remember that.
Yeah. And they did it successfully. I don't know the intricacies of it, but yeah, it worked and the community rallied behind them and that there's a line out the door every night. So yeah, I think if there is something, if when done correctly, that can help out the small businesses, but you have to take into consideration, like we talked about, the negatives, which are the, you know, the money that's withheld.
Right.
But I know even in my community, if there's a sudden death of a family member, for example, or a small business owner, there's always a GoFundMe that someone will put up and say, help them get through this difficult time.
Right.
And typically I never see less than $5,000. I mean, it usually is, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000. That's being donated. So yeah, it's interesting how,
you know,
that think about it. That wasn't around maybe even five years ago.
We literally passed the hat, right?
Right.
Yeah. it was, you know, you went around from neighbor to neighbor and explained what was going on. So and so got burned out of their apartment.
Yes.
You're willing to help out. What do you would like to donate? And now it's turned into something way more than that. But also, you know, there's people that could, you know, defraud people too. So.
Yes. Hmm.
You are listening to In Perspective with Bob Branco and Andy Schiappetta, who is filling in for Peter Alchil. Our guest is Paula Fleming, Chief Marketing and Sales Officer with the Better Business Bureau out of Boston, Massachusetts. And I think now we're going to turn our festivities over to our callers to find out what's on their minds. So let me ask Melissa if there are any hands raised.
We indeed do.
All right.
Just a moment. We have two raised hands thus far, and the first person is Sharon Strakowski. Sharon, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. This is a wonderful presentation. I have a quick question about the website itself. Can you put in a zip code? Let's say you're looking for a lawyer. How do you do a search on the website?
Yes, you can type in your town and then you would say, you know, or you could even go to Google and just say Better Business Bureau, Natick, Massachusetts, contractor. And it would come up.
Okay.
Yeah. It comes up that way. Yeah. So either bbb.org, you type in your town. If you only want to see accredited businesses, you can filter that way. And then it will bring up and you can even request a quote from our members if you choose to do that 1, 2, or 3, which I always encourage people to get 3 quotes. right from our website.
Excellent. My other question is, I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts, and my apartment building is now owned, as many are, by an out-of-state company in California, and they're not doing a great job. And I don't know if the Better Business Bureau tries to do any tracking of these out-of-state property managers.
So if it is a property, so if your landlord is part of a larger property management company, you can do research on them and you can report on them. And we do look for trends and what we refer to as pattern of complaints. So if there are if there's a dozen complaints on against this one company, we would consider a pattern of complaints if it's a small business. And yes, we would look at it, but I haven't had, and I just want to clarify, it's a little bit odd, but we are not in charge of Worcester. That would be the BBB of Central New England. That's what it's called.
And Say it again. The what?
It's the BBB of Central New England.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. But it's still the same website, bbb.org. It's just run by a different CEO.
Well, how do you get to that site then?
No, the same site. It's the same way. bbb.org. But I would usually be able to pull up your property management company, and as could I, but I just wouldn't be able to give you more information about what complaints have already been filed, et cetera, because that would be out of that Better Business Bureau.
But I guess what I'm saying is, if it's the same site, how do I get to those people in Central New England?
It would just, by your IP address, it would auto route you to that Better
Business Bureau. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you, Sharon, for your input as always.
And good luck with your property management company. I'm sorry you're going through that.
Melissa, do we have anybody else?
We have one more, and that is Tony. Go ahead.
Hold on.
Hello, Tony.
Hello. First of all, my compliments to Annie. Doing a great job, Annie.
Thank you.
Well, I have a lovely story first about the culture of the organization of the Better Business Bureau that goes back in time. I knew a fellow who I met in 1977 who joined the BBB in 1947. He spent about 3 years there, and then he took an early retirement at age 62. And the way he got there was he was actually with the United States Department of State after World War II, as a liaison between the British sector of the then divided Germany and the American sector of the then divided Germany, when they discovered that he was gay, and they drummed him out of the Foreign Service, and he makes his way to New York and he joins the Better Business Bureau. We had a 30-year successful career, and in the time I knew him, just had nothing but wonderful things to say about the BBB. You alluded to it earlier when you made reference to the diversity of staff at the BBB. So
yes.
I want you to appreciate that story. I think it's a lovely story and a successful career after, something unfortunate that had happened to him, way back then.
That's nice to hear. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story.
Oh, you're welcome. Quick question. I assume in addition to ADD, you have a visual impairment of some type?
I do not.
You do not? Okay. One never knows what Bob's guess, who has a visual impairment and who doesn't. About how you do your job with a visual impairment does not count. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Great question.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
Thank you.
Melissa, please let us know when there are any additional hands raised. Just interrupt us at your leisure. Let us know.
Absolutely, yes.
So I have a question for you, Paula. Where in the United States is the largest part of the BBB? Like, what region is the biggest? I'm assuming it's either California or Texas, but, I don't know. So
if you're speaking geographically, the Texas Better Business Bureau is actually 5 Better Business Bureaus in that one state.
Wow.
However,
okay.
However, if you're talking about the largest membership and territory, it would be Phoenix, Arizona.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. They have a large territory. What happens is a Better Business Bureau can acquire another area if, say, the CEO decides to retire and no one steps up, or if we have really good benefits and the businesses are saying, hey, I want those benefits. Because sometimes what, like, for what we offer, you might not get that in another Better Business Bureau. So another Better Business Bureau might not be as fortunate as I am to have staff that is, you know, can create a website, can create brochures, can create business cards, can create a logo, will go out and do headshots, will go out and do product shots, will go out and do video content with a drone for your business. So these are all benefits that we offer, but you might not get that elsewhere. So long-winded answer, but Better Business Bureau serving the Pacific Southwest, which is headquartered in Phoenix, is technically the largest Better Business Bureau.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. Wow. Lots of mileage for sure. And which is the smallest area?
Oh, I would say New Hampshire. Oh, if she hears this, she's going to be like, really? You had to say that? Well, I had to ask. I have to drive through New Hampshire to get to my territory, so I got to say it.
I'm surprised New Hampshire isn't part of your territory. You would think it would be.
You would think, but yeah. Oh, I see more hands up.
And we do have, a few other raised hands.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. Area code 575 ending in 970. If you could unmute and tell me who you are, please, that would be great.
Yes, this is Beth.
Oh, Beth, hey, Beth from New Mexico.
Yeah, it sure is. I would like to know what Better Business Bureau serves New Mexico because there's different things that have happened to, and we cannot find the listing for it.
Oh, okay.
And so you know, some seniors don't have computers, even sighted seniors, and
so
it's kind of difficult to get in touch with if you don't have something, if you don't have a computer.
I can tell you if it's helpful to you. It's BBB New Mexico in Southwest Colorado, and I have their phone number if you would like it.
Oh, okay.
It is 505-346-0110.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thank you.
And that's out of Albuquerque.
Albuquerque?
Yes. Yes.
I kind of guessed that if it was a 346, and they just serve New Mexico and Southwest Colorado?
I do not, but they have a great CEO out there. So yes, they have a pretty big area too. Not as big as mine, but yeah, they do Southwest Colorado and New Mexico. So yeah, they're their individual Better Business Bureau and they will report on any business in those states.
Okay, and if by any chance, what would their website be?
The same, everybody uses the same website. It's called, it's BBB, Better Business Bureau, bbb.org.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very, very much, and thanks for the phone number to them. Because we too have a lot of property managers, too, that are out of state, and they're not doing a good job, and it's very hard to get a hold of them sometimes.
Happy to help.
I have a question, Paula, briefly before we go to our next contributor. This may or may not be your field, and if it's not, please forgive me for asking the question. These extraordinary high rents, especially in the Boston area, of over $2,000 per month, whether it's a private landlord or corporations or monopolies or whoever is renting, do you think that those rent prices are unreasonable or justified?
That's a loaded question, and that would be my opinion, not Better Business Bureau.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry at all. I have an opinion. I mean, I think they make it nearly impossible for a business to get off the ground when they're charging $5,000 a month for a small storefront in a downtown suburb, and that's the low end. I think it's nearly impossible to live in New England with the cost of housing the way it is. And I find it very frustrating. I know some of my team members had to move back home with their parents because they can't afford to buy a home, nor could they afford rent because it is so astronomical. So that's my opinion. Again, not the opinion of the Better Business Bureau, but my personal opinion.
Okay. Melissa, do we have anybody else in line?
So we do have Tony back, but he's already spoken. Would you like to take him again?
If he's the only person there, yes. We'll take him.
Yeah, he's your only raised hand at the moment.
All right. Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Olga, audio now unmuted.
Oh, God, I was holding my breath for a second there. I'm going to get a disability-related question in here one way or the other. So having failed the first time, let me ask you this one, Paul. Do you run into, does the Better Business Bureau run into things where somehow or other they know that there's a disability factor or element involved in either the complaint or the practice or whatever? You know, you immediately think of disability discrimination, but it could be anything. I have no idea whether or not there's even a way to know whether there's a disability factor involved at all, but I thought I'd throw out the question to you.
That's a great question. And I'll be frank, there's no way of us really to know unless it's shared. It's not something we would ask at any point in time. I mean, we do ask questions of our members, you know, if they are Black owned or woman owned or veteran owned, but we, in regards to consumers, we do not ask. But I know that it has been brought up before in complaints where they, you know, they felt, one I've read recently was they felt as though they were being treated unfairly. Another one was the website didn't meet their
WCA
compliant. I can't remember the acronym.
Pizza Hut comes to mind.
Yeah.
Not Pizza Hut. It was something else. It was another pizza place. This is Annie speaking, where the consumer went into legal action. And I was wondering is like, where do you step in and step out of something like that?
Yeah. Well, if it was something that, so if a consumer has gone to the route in which they're suing, then we would step out of it because
right, that's what I, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our goal is to help come mediate the situation. If they've gone to the business first, mediate as an impartial party. And then if it gets to a place where, you know, that like, as you mentioned, ADA or, you know, it could be a number of different, but that would be way above us and we would step out of it. But we might be asked to from the court, which has happened for all of the complaints, so they can see if this is a problem or if there's a pattern themselves.
Okay. I mean, I know it's a very slippery slope and it is a very complicated area. Like, where do you draw the line? You know, as a consumer, you know, let's say I go back to the returning my KitchenAid product. And, you know, I want to return it because it's not accessible to me, but I'm being told I can't return it because it's still in good, you know, it's not broken, but it's, you know, so like where is that line with the Better Business Bureau in terms of something like that?
Yeah, they would have to, I mean, really it's the consumer. So the consumer could say, I went to Best Buy. They would not return it because it didn't meet their X, Y, or Z. And then we would come back and say, okay, this is what their Best Buy's response was. Does it meet your needs? So that's the back and forth. And some of it, the team will have to have a meeting about it. And say, okay, here's what the consumer's saying. Here's what the business is saying. Here are the pictures. In some cases, we have pictures. And then we'll make an evaluation to the best of our ability. Unfortunately, as you can imagine, someone always ends up unhappy, whether it be the business or the consumer in those type of situations, if it gets to that point.
And this is
if you used a credit card, then just steal it, this card, and get a brand new one.
And
we do have one more raised hand when you're ready, Bob.
Tony, do you have one final question?
It goes to this conversation, then I'll be quiet, I promise. You know, if the customer, when they're in the store making the purchase, is careful to make sure that they can really use the device before they buy it, you know, and I've done this, helped my girlfriend buy a stove, and she's a partially sighted person. We had to make sure she could really somehow use that device, and that they were very attentive to us. The company called PC Richard, which I know is in New York. I don't know if it's anywhere else. and they were very attentive. Now, this is the kind of thing that I think is in the spirit of the, you know, the kind of service that Better Business Bureau wants to foster. This is about user friendliness and taking care of your customer and things like that. And if this kind of activity happens and they are starting to be really mean to you because you have not found your product to be accessible and you did your best, then, you know, I think they're starting to breach some kind of business etiquette there. I don't know what. But that's it, Bob. I promise you won't hear from me anymore this broadcast.
We always enjoy hearing from you, Tony. We always do. Okay, Felix.
I would just say, Tony, I hope you went, and if you did not, go write a positive review about that business.
There you go.
No, but I'm going to mention.
We have time for one more, I believe.
Yeah, we have Sharon back with us.
Okay, Sharon.
What I'm wondering about is whether the BBB has, say, local newsletters or alerts about particular scams that are happening in an area that we could sign up for?
We absolutely do. If you go to bbb.org /scam tracker, there's a link to that. You can put your email and you would get an email, or just check out, bookmark our page and go and check it out. We update tips, scams, alerts on companies daily on our website.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay. We have about 3 minutes, Melissa, I believe, 3 or 4.
We have 1 minute before the 5 minute mark.
Okay.
Okay. I learned so much today. I think I was stuck in the past, honestly, Paula, about the BBB, you know, and I'm just very happy to know that that you all are supporting everything, you know, in terms of, you know, contemporary stuff that's going on in the web, and whether it's a brick and mortar or whether it's, you know, all online. I mean, you meet our needs, and that's really comforting.
Well, that makes me happy because my primary goal is educating people and trying to save money so it does not go into the pockets of the scam artists, and also make sure that those ethical businesses are getting the foot traffic and you're not doing business with someone who is, you know, not above board, as my mother would say.
Paula, do you think that self-employment is trending upward still? Do you think that's still the case?
I do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. I think since COVID, to be honest.
Because with all of the unemployment out there, you know, especially since COVID began, even prior to that, more and more people have either been encouraged to or have decided on their own to be self-employed.
Yes, the number of solopreneurs in Vermont alone is mind-blowing to me. Yeah. So solopreneurship is something that I just have started seeing more and more of, like you said, right before the pandemic, and just continues to increase. Entrepreneurship was, you know, it was big, but solopreneurship, I mean, there's a lot of people that I network with that are.
You know, Paula, I have never heard that term before, solopreneurship. Usually it's sole proprietor.
Yes.
How new is that term? I don't think I've ever heard it before.
New word for me, really? Too, and I'm a writer. Yeah.
Solopreneur, yep.
Yeah, so entrepreneur and solopreneur, yeah.
Yep, love it.
So what does preneur mean?
Oh, that's a great question.
You have entrepreneur, you have solopreneur. What exactly does that mean? That must have a meaning.
It does.
Business, right?
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Business or worker. Hang on. I'm going to ask Siri.
A kind of person who has employed in an organizer. I don't know. Preneur, it says preneur. I'm looking at it, but it doesn't really say. I just think business when I think of it, a person who offers something, preneur.
Audio now.
It's a French word.
Yeah, I'm sure it's French. I had a feeling it would be.
I got deep thinker, a person who thinks a lot. I don't think that's helping us here, but that was
good.
All right. I got entrepreneurship is someone, either a person or an organization that takes on, you know, business responsibilities.
Oh yeah, entrepreneur, but preneur, right. Preneur, I just, the end word of it, cause solopreneur, entrepreneur. I was trying to
think. I always thought an entrepreneur was a sole proprietor.
I did too.
That's what I always thought. I didn't know there were two separate terms.
Yeah, they refer to themselves as solopreneurs.
Okay.
Well, Paula, you are providing a very important service to business and to help keep this economy going the way it should be in this country. You're a big part of it, and we appreciate all that you do for people who want to go into small business and for helping to create boundaries and set positive guidelines for business and to help them out in every way possible and to protect them too.
Yeah.
And for that alone, and for other reasons, we appreciate you having us on In Perspective today. We appreciate you taking the time to share what you do and your knowledge and to help people out who may either are in business now or want to go into business later on.
It's been a delight. Thank you so much.
We appreciate having you. And again, that's BBB.org. And depending on what state you're in, you can find that particular state's services, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, very good. Thanks again, Paula. And I also want to thank Annie for filling in for Peter. Peter, we missed you. We hope you return to us real soon. And I also want to thank Melissa for being our host for today's program and for our participants who took part. My name is Bob Branco. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. See you next week when we have our old friend Congressman Le Boutelier back. It should be another interesting political discussion. Take care, everybody.